about this.
These two
people.
I am geeking out.
To the Geeks Unleashed podcast.
Mark.
Jasmine.
What a nerd.
Nerd alert.
Unleashed.
Television.
What are you talking about?
Anything can be a podcast.
Video game.
Geek.
What is a geek?
Oh, hi, Mark.
The whole point is, of course, the plot is.
You guys have great conversation.
I am geeking out.
Unleashed.
Movies. People love movies.
All right, you guys, podcast time.
You're listening to the Geeks Unleashed podcast. Part of the BCP Bad Batch, we take our passions and our fandoms and we turn them into conversations with you.
Hello, welcome to Geeks Unleashed. It's episode 154. I'm Mark.
I'm Jasmine.
And each week on the Geeks Unleashed podcast, we catch up on our pop culture lives as well as bring you a review of something adapted from the comic book or gaming world.
Yes, and before we get started, if you're watching on YouTube, thank you so much. We appreciate that. We would also love it if you would like this video and subscribe to our channel. And if you're watching on your favorite podcast, or watching, good grief, listening on your favorite podcast platform, we appreciate that as well. We'd also love it if you leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser.
Also, please, we would love it if you were to donate to our Ko-Fi. We would appreciate that. So jumping straight into this week's Geek of the Week, do you want to go first?
Okay, so I started watching this anime that just came out earlier this year. It's called Bujigiri. And for those of you who watch anime, imagine if Tokyo Revengers and Skate the Infinity had a baby, this would be it. Like, it has the bright color palette from Skate, but it has, like, the gangs fighting each other, like in Tokyo Revengers. And it also has like this supernatural sort of djinn element to it. It's really fun, really silly. It's one of those like yelly anime. Like the main character is very like, he screams a lot. And so like, I know that can be really grating for some people, but it's really entertaining. I think I'm on episode 6. So I'm not that far along yet, but I have definitely been enjoying watching Bujigiri.
I that screaming thing that we talked about, that you talked about. You've talked about that before, and I've said, yeah, that's a completely anime Japanese trait that they have.
Yeah. I just wonder, like, what is the purpose of these characters? Like, it feels like your only job is to just run through scenes screaming at the top of your lungs. Like, I don't get it. One part that I just still don't get.
Do you reckon that happens in Japan, that they just like run down the street and start screaming?
Yeah, right. They're so quiet. They are so quiet.
Maybe there's a portion of Japan or something that like
maybe
screaming.
Maybe we miss it.
So my Geek of the Week, disappointed with myself for not knowing that this came out about a month ago. So in 2021, a TV show came out called Kin. Season 1, I binge watched that when it came out. Season 2 came out actually a year ago, really weirdly, in Ireland. And however, last month it came out in England. And I didn't know about it. I missed that completely. And then one of my wife's friends said something about it to her. And I was like, what? Kin is back? And I literally looked it up. I was like, no way, can't believe that. So, Kin is set in Dublin. It follows a family called Kinzers. They're sort of drug dealing, sort of gangster types in Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
And the main one is a guy called Michael, who you may be familiar with. Really weird that we're doing this movie, but he played Charlie Cox, who played Daredevil in the Netflix TV series. So he plays Michael Kinzer. In season one, they teased that the head of the family, a guy called Bryn, who'd been locked up for years, he had a scene or two or something in season one. And season two opens up with him getting out. And the whole of the family have got an order now. There was a bit of a fallout in the previous season, but Amanda, who actually married into the family, had taken over running the family, essentially. And she's was good at it and everything. There was no real fallout of her running it, but she's very clever and she was in charge and she'd sort of saved their necks last time. And then Bryn gets out and, oh, it's just you know, every problem they had during season two, Bryn was at the source of it. And anyway, me and my wife, we binge watched the heck out of season two. We did it over two nights. I think Monday and Tuesday night or something. And I think the final episode, we got up Wednesday morning and watched an hour before.
Weird for Mark, because Mark usually doesn't binge. Like, it takes Mark like a week to get through something.
Oh, yeah, I know. There's a few TV series that I'm just watching one episode a week at the moment that even came out years ago. And but this series, I was so addictive. Every time it ended, I was like, no, I've got to happen next. And oh, it was so good. And there's some sad moments in it too. Not everybody makes it out alive.
As is want to happen with gangs, yes.
Yeah. It just whenever you watch things like this, you're like, I could never be a gangster. Literally, the idea of just, honestly, and there's scenes where some people like walk out of a shop, buying a portion of chips or whatever, chatting away to their mates, suddenly they just get popped in the back of the head. How can you live that life? Right? And some of these people are like, haven't even made it past 25. It's just crazy. So, but anyway, it's a really good show. Like, so addictive. And when it ends, there's another guy in it that you'll know as well. Really famous, Aidan Gillian. Been in about a million things. Whatchamacallit? Game of Thrones, Maze Runner, loads of stuff.
He was
Peaky Blinders.
I know.
No, he's in it. But when season two ends, what a cliffhanger. And there's so many things like left dangling. There's no news on the season three, but I'd seriously recommend it. Yeah, if you love things like Peaky Blinders or any kind of English British gangster type shows, it's really good. So,
is it good like Gangs of London?
It's not as violent as Gangs of London. Okay. But I would say if you're, because Gangs of London is extremely violent, this is not as violent. Don't get me wrong, you know, there are people getting killed.
People probably get most whacked.
Probably most episodes, somebody does get whacked.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say that's most episodes, somebody goes out, someone's put in a barrel, someone's shot, someone's whatever. Yeah. So, yeah. There's no unnecessary grotesqueness though. There's no sickos in it. Like, so there's the occasional person getting beaten up. Maybe someone got their ear bitten at some point, but you know, none of these are particularly lovely things. But yeah. Gangs of London is far worse in terms of violence and grotesqueness. Don't get me wrong, this has got violence in it, but I would say the blood and horribleness is very minimal, so it's not a family friendly show by any means. So
it's parents only. Don't bring the kids.
Yeah, don't bring the kids. No, honestly, it's so good. I love the twists and turns. There's one thing they set up quite early on with somebody gets killed with a piece of paper with a bank account and sort code in, which is obviously an account that had been set up. Outside of Ireland, you know, one of these Cayman Island accounts. And then later on, the police find this piece of paper on this dead body. Now, I won't say any more, but that the police obviously become aware of this account number and sort code. And the gangsters, they find out that they're aware of this. And this is how clever Amanda is. She when she realizes that they know about this account, she then uses that to her advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like little things like that. And I, the moment I realized Amanda knew that the police knew about it, I was like, she's going to do something clever here. And she did. She actually did do something really clever with it. So this is what I liked about Amanda. Whilst she may not be particularly well liked within the show, she's very clever and can outnumber gangsters as well as police. So,
I like it.
And she says it herself at the end. She said, I'm good at this, and that's why I like doing it. So,
yeah.
Don't get me wrong, in the real world, would rather there was no crime, rather there was no gangsters. All that. I mean, look, no, seriously, like, obviously, you know, I'm clearly don't condone it in real life, but to watch it on TV is brilliant. So
yeah,
good stuff. Well recommended. Yeah, well recommended. Honestly, for me, yeah, like you say, for me to binge something in 2 days is quite unlike me. So right, the main event.
Here we are.
The reason we're all here. The tunnel that I took us down.
We've just been on a string of bad films.
So Elektra from 2005, directed by Rob Bowman. Screenplay and story by Zach Penn, Stuart Zickerman, and M. Raven Metzner, I think. Based on characters from Marvel Comics.
And it stars Jennifer Garner as Elektra, Goran Visnjic as Mark Miller, Kristen Zine as Abby Miller, Will Yoon Lee as Kirigiri, Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa, love him, as Roshi, Terrence Stamp as Stick, Natasha Mockby as Typhoid, Bob Sapp as Stone, Chris Ackerman as Tattoo.
So Elektra first appeared in Daredevil 168, which was January 1981, and was created by Frank Miller. Stick was the character of Stick first appeared in Daredevil 176 from November 1981, also created by Frank Miller. The Hand, they first appeared in Daredevil in 174, which was September 1981, also by Frank Miller. So the Hand are the ninja organization which we get to meet during this movie. People may also be familiar from the Daredevil series. Oh, and Iron Fist TV series.
And the Defenders.
Oh, yeah, and the Defenders. So, right, okay. The release date for this movie was the 14th of January, 2005. Had a running time of 97 minutes. Had a lower budget than last time with $43 million. Also made a lot less as well. Box office, $57 million. So it made its money back, just about. Although I'm sure there was a loss overall, but anyway, had a rating of PG.
Did not realize this was a PG film.
Well, in America, you guys gave it PG-13, so over here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to say that. It really felt more like a PG-13 film than a PG film.
Yeah, PG-13.
All right, fun facts. There aren't too many about this, but they shot the entire film in 62 days. That's it, because Jennifer Garner and Goran Visnjic were both on breaks.
How long? How many days?
62.
Oh, 62. Sorry, I thought you said something else. 62. Wow.
Yeah. So the whole thing, 62 days. And that was because both of them were in between seasons. Jennifer Garner was in between seasons on Alias, and Goran Visnjic was in between seasons on ER. And so they were like, all right, we're on summer break. This is the only time that we have. So that's what they did. Jennifer Garner, while filming the movie, complained about how awful the filming was, like, or how awful she thought that the movie was. And she got a lot of kickback for that, like, at the time, because she was like the star and she was complaining about how crap the movie was. And she was even quoted as saying, like, I'm doing this because I was contracted through Daredevil. Like, because of Daredevil, I was contracted to do this movie. She's like, otherwise I would not have come back to do to do this movie. Which I thought was kind of funny, because like, it seems super in line with what she was already doing. But I guess like, she didn't want to be typecast because she was in Alias and everybody was like, oh man, she's such a badass on Alias, which she was. But she was like, I don't know how I got to be the action girl. So she was very much like, this is not my jam filming this. And she was very vocal about it. And then later on, she did an interview years and years later. And she's referring to kind of like after Feige came in and like cleaned up the Marvel and created the MCU and all that stuff. She was quoted to the Hollywood Reporter and she said, it's such a shame, honestly, because once Kevin took over, everything was elevated, the writing, the direction, the comedy inside of the stories that they were telling. And she's like, and I absolutely did not have that experience while filming Elektra. So it feels like it was just kind of a slog. Like nobody really enjoyed it during, like there aren't bad stories. I couldn't find any like bad stories, nothing like the drama that was going on with Street Fighter. And then some comic facts. This is all set. This film and Daredevil are set on Earth 701-306. And as far as I know, these are the only two characters or films that are set on this Earth, 701-306. I don't know how many Earths there are in the Marvel multiverse. I wonder if they would ever like reveal that in any of the stuff that they have coming up. Because they don't talk about that in Loki either, about all the different times. I mean, they talk about that there are lots and lots of them, but they don't ever say like, oh, so-and-so said that there are X number of universes. So I don't know. That'd be interesting to find out. This is also the first Marvel female-led film. And then the very next one was 20 years later with Black Widow, which was also too little too late. Also, she's one of the youngest characters, so to speak, that got her own, like that got a headline film, because she was a character that was created in the 80s. And the other character who is really young and has their own film is Miles Morales with Into the Spider-Verse. Otherwise, Marvel pulls from all of their old heads. All of the old guys have this stuff. Kamal Khan obviously has the Ms. Marvel series, and she was in the Marvels film, but she's also relatively new. So I thought that was interesting. I guess I didn't realize, like, maybe I need to read Daredevil. I don't know. It just seems like Daredevil was created, and then there were almost 200 issues before some of those bigger, like, villains and bigger, you know, other people came along in the series. Like, what the hell was Daredevil doing before all of these other characters came along is my question. But yeah, so that's, again, the information on this one was sparse. It was very, Jennifer Garner did it because she was contracted to. That's the summation of the fun facts for this film.
Ms. Marvel, I just looked it up, first appeared in January 2014. So, and her TV series came out, was it last year or the year before?
Yeah.
So, yeah, actually, that's really within 10 years.
That's a much shorter distance between Miles Morales and Kamala Khan versus, like, Elektra. So, maybe we won't have to keep waiting that long.
Yeah, because
there's been so much talk around this Ironheart series that is not happening yet, but that would be another new character that would be getting their own, like, face of a series.
I think they realized, though, that they just were putting out too much, which it was all right during COVID. Well, I was happy with it during COVID, but yeah, maybe a little bit less now. So.
Well, yeah, now that people...
Just go back to quality rather than quantity.
So. Yeah.
Right, yeah. So, no, I agree with you, actually. So if you look at what I shouted out, the first appearances, Elektra, Stick, The Hand, they all came out in 1981. And I think we said last week as well, a lot of the other characters, like Bullseye and stuff, I haven't got them written in front of me now, came out a lot later. But
yeah,
you can see the impact that Frank Miller had on the Daredevil run. Frank Miller had on the Daredevil run, because a lot of these bigger characters have such a mainstream effect on what we see from the general public. Because, you know, I haven't read any of those early Daredevils, and I've got no idea. I don't have enough knowledge of Daredevil to know what on earth went on in the first 100 or so issues.
Yeah. I just think it's so weird, because, like, with Batman, it was like Batman and Joker and a lot of his rogues gallery, they all popped up immediately. And so it's just weird to see, like, who you fighting for 100 issues, man? Like, I really want to know what the hell is going on. Like, what are you doing for 100 issues?
Yeah, maybe we'll have to put that on our shopping list, early Daredevil comics or something. So, right, okay, so the IMDb summary for this movie. I know I like the fact that actually her name is in the summary rather than a generic summary. Yeah,
woman, Elektra, warrior.
Yeah. Elektra, the warrior, survives a near-death experience, becomes an assassin for hire, and tries to protect her two latest targets, a single father and his young daughter, from a group of supernatural assassins.
That's actually fairly accurate.
Mm-hmm. So we know that the hand is fairly supernatural, and even her resurrection is supernatural. So you mentioned this earlier, but what is your knowledge before this movie of Elektra?
Whatever they had of her in the Daredevil movie and the 2 years before this one, that was the extent of my knowledge of Elektra.
So I haven't unfortunately read any of the Frank Miller stuff. And I know people may bring me down for that and be like, what? You haven't read anything? Because I know the snobbery within the comics community that there is, but I haven't read any Frank Miller stuff at all, which I think we're going to look to correct fairly soon. But I haven't read any of that stuff. However, I have read Elektra in the comics. I first came across Elektra within the Wolverine run during 1996, when Wolverine was in full animal mode. So when I say animal mode, you know how he has metal come out of his hands? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know this, but Wolverine was covered in adamantium, which actually covered all of his bones within his body, including his claws. That was removed from him by Magneto, and that metal apparently is the only thing that helps keep his more human side intact. And there was a period of time where Stick and Elektra were actually in his series for quite a few issues, and Stick was trying to help Wolverine. And I came into comics around 1994. I didn't know, obviously, it was all a learning experience and there's a lot going on. And anyway, so I picked up a few issues of Wolverine at the time in 1996, during just before and maybe a little bit afterwards of the Onslaught saga. So that was my first thing of Elektra and Stick. Didn't know much about them, but I think I was aware of them for some reason, but I don't know. But anyway, she had her own series that came out. Elektra, her first ever sort of ongoing solo run, came out in 1996 by Peter Milligan and Mike Diodato. And I picked up the first few issues, and I'll be honest, I didn't really enjoy it, so I dropped it. However, forward on to 2002, under the Marvel Knights banner, and I did pick up her Bendis. Bendis did the first six issues, and then Greg Rucka took over. And I remember reading a good chunk of that, and I think it started off like really strong. The art was amazing. The art, story was brilliant. However, I think they must have felt that maybe numbers were dropping. I remember the art getting worse as it went on. However, I felt the story was stayed strong.
Yeah.
And so I just felt like it limped along towards the end. So I've actually still got that run in my boxes of comics. So I don't remember having the 1996 run anymore, although I only think I bought the first few issues. But yeah, so I bought a lot of those stuff, you know, at the end of the 90s and the early 2000s. Haven't read anything current for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I never read any of her early stuff at all. But yeah, I was quite aware of her character, and I'm aware of the history of her death and resurrection, although having never read any of that original stuff. So, but yeah. And then obviously I watched the Netflix shows like you. And that brings me to today's movie. So you've never seen this movie before?
Yeah, I thought I had. And then when I was rewatching it, I was not actually rewatching it. I was watching it for the first time. Like, nothing was familiar. And I guess it was just trailers that I had seen. Like, because there were a couple of fight sequences, especially like the one at the end with all the sheets and stuff, that looked really familiar, but nothing else was familiar. And I was like, okay, I guess I never, maybe Daredevil traumatized me so much that I just never watched Elektra.
So this is, I think it is my second viewing of this movie. When I watched it, I didn't remember any of it. I think, maybe I remembered like 2% of it or something. I do remember watching it, but I never went to the cinema to see it. Do you know, in the last episode I told you, I went and watched Daredevil and was really trying to convince myself that it was good afterwards for ages. I was like, I really wanted it to be good. And then more, as time went on, I more and more thought, no, actually, that was a terrible film. And there was, and there wasn't a huge gap between Daredevil and Elektra coming out. Yeah. So when Elektra came out, I didn't go to the cinema and see it. Yeah. I was like, no, I'm not going to be fooled twice.
Yeah, like, I think I was probably on that same train. I was just like, no, man, you got me with Daredevil, but I'm not doing that again.
I think everyone, I think the numbers say that everybody else is the same, but no, I'm not doing that again.
Yeah.
I don't think I watched this movie for at least 5 or 6 years because I can remember I was in the first house that me and my wife bought together. That's when I saw it. I've got this vague feeling of watching it quite early into that world. So around 2010, 2011, I probably watched it. So 5 or 6 years after release. I don't even really remember what I thought, but I think initially I was like, actually, this isn't as bad as Daredevil. That's why my feelings were at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that brings me to actually, what's our overall thoughts of this movie? So I'd like to hear what you think. What is your overall thoughts?
Actually, kind of what you just said. Like, when I finished it, I was like, that wasn't as bad as Daredevil. And then I felt bad because, like, I didn't see it sooner, but it wasn't as bad as Daredevil. I think the fight choreography here is better, which I am always a fan of. I'm always a fan of, like, physicality. So whenever the fight sequences are good, or the fight choreography, stunt choreography, whenever that stuff is good, usually that'll be enough to keep me entertained, even if the plot and everything else is terrible. So I did enjoy the fights in this film. I didn't care much for the plot, like, just the forced romance between her and Mark Miller was just like, why? But overall, this was nowhere near as bad as I had built it up in my head to be. And also, I think it was just because, like, I thought I had already seen this movie and I hadn't. And so, like, watching it, I was like, oh, this is different than what I was expecting. There was a lot of supernatural stuff, which, of course, like, with Daredevil, there's kind of that element too, but it was heavier with this one. But I also thought that compared to the two films, Elektra had much more, like, autonomy in this one, as opposed to just being some dead guy's daughter, you know? Because I felt like after her dad got killed in Daredevil, she was just like, no, I'm doing everything for my dad. I'm doing everything for my dad. And I'm like, okay, well, that's great. It's great. Revenge. Yay. So it just, I like that she was just kind of an assassin, like, honestly. Because it's almost like maybe she's a bad guy. But I also like rooting for the bad guy. So I don't know. I had very mixed feelings about this film, I would say.
Yeah, I think even now, I still prefer it to Daredevil. I think the problem with Daredevil was they tried to put 3 seasons worth of TV content into an hour and a half movie and bloated the whole film. I prefer that this was a lot more toned down, stripped back, one character focused. You know, that the hero was the main focus of the film. And obviously there was obviously various subplot characters, etc. And, you know, there was a main villain. But I love the fact that we didn't have, you know, 18 different main characters that could have equally have had their own movie. I think it was great to see that stripped backness, that, you know, much more of a solo movie they needed. And even having that lower budget forced them into toning this movie down. And actually giving, I think having the, I didn't realize this about the time frame, but probably having that short time frame as well didn't allow them to mess around and so having the lower budget and the shorter time frame allowed them to make what I think really is probably a TV movie. That's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah, I can see that.
And no, I mean, obviously, TV movie with a bigger budget. Maybe now it'd be a streaming movie.
Like, yes, Netflix. Exactly.
It would be more of a streaming movie in today's world. It's not a TV movie, but it's more, I feel like it's more,
it's not a theatrical release anymore.
No. I don't think it's a theatrical release, but it's a nice addition. And I like the links back to Daredevil with the necklace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, clearly the resurrection, which we got by seeing the necklace at the end of Daredevil, and then they have that link back to this today. I don't know. I don't want to say I hate this movie, like, because I don't hate it.
Yeah.
I don't particularly love this movie. I don't think this movie is particularly offensive in any capacity. I think Daredevil was just so absolutely awful. Like, words can't describe. But I don't, there's nothing in this movie that actually makes me go, no, I hate this movie. Like, I don't.
Yeah, this movie does not strike any kind of strong emotion one way or the other. I did not love it. I did not hate it. It is very just like meh.
The characters that she was protecting, I sometimes liked, so, you know, the romance thing I wasn't interested in, but I sometimes liked the sort of little twist that would come out, like the girl Abby with the necklace. Oh, these are, I got them, yeah, these little bead things she had around her neck, and then, sorry, her wrist, and then it transpired that actually there's a lot more to those characters. I liked that twist when she started fighting along with Elektra. I thought that was cool that that came out. And it was good that they teased the beads earlier on. It wasn't just all of a sudden. And I know there's other things I've criticized in the past where it was all of a sudden this came out. I like the fact that they did allude to that earlier on.
Yeah.
When Elektra made a comment about the beads and the girl just dismissed it. But looking back, that was actually... Yeah, that was quite clever, though, that they did that. So I'll give them that. But overall, I don't love the movie. I don't hate the movie. I don't think this is the best movie in the world by any event. Would I watch it again? I mean, I'm not saying I would put it on, but if it was on, I wouldn't be like offended. It wouldn't be awful to me to sit. Like, if I walked in and someone had it on, it wouldn't be offensive to me to sit on where there are other movies. So I'm like, you know, there's other movies we've seen like Spawn or Man Thing or even Daredevil.
So if I walked in and Spawn was on, I'd watch it. Okay, I'd watch it.
Or Daredevil. Daredevil was on, I'd probably say, can we turn this off? I think Jennifer Garner carried herself well during this movie.
Yeah.
You talked about Alias. I'm a huge Alias fan, and I'm sure, and that kind of shocked me even more that I didn't watch this when it came out. I was absolutely addicted. I thought Jennifer Garner in Alias was amazing. I loved how she carried fight scenes. She was charming in Alias. She was charming, funny. Yeah, all range of emotions. There were so many great twists and turns through Alias. I'm absolutely addicted. So I'm quite shocked I didn't even watch this movie back then.
And that's the thing. So. Like, they didn't even utilize all of her talents in this movie because she's actually really funny. And they just made Elektra this super flat personality. Like, she just lacked a personality altogether.
I don't think Elektra's really funny, though, so I don't think...
I know, not... Like, but, like, it just... I feel like that's a waste. Like, I just...
Yeah, but... Like... Yeah, but I think the character of Elektra, I just don't see the character of Elektra being funny. Like, I just... Like, she's an assassin who got resurrected... And, you know, he's an assassin for hire, and, you know, I don't know.
She could learn a thing or two from Deadpool. I'm just saying.
Well, maybe she will.
Right. There are rumors.
So
we'll see.
There's the characters in this movie. Last week we talked about the variety of characters. This one does obviously have a variety. But she's the lead, followed by Mark Miller's, you know, love interest, person she's protecting, and then Abby. I think probably the next sort of character has any development is Stick, and then Roshi, who obviously is the head of the Hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to say you have a favorite character, but do you?
I actually liked Kitty Giddy, the Roshi's son, who was trying to like usurp his father's power and take over the Hand. Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, I like Will Yun Lee. I like him as an actor. So when I recognized him, I was like, oh, this is great. I didn't realize he was in here. But I really just kind of liked how he was very much like one track minded when it came to like being a villain. He was like, no, that girl has the power that we need. So I'm going to do whatever it takes to go and get her. So I liked his character. And then obviously, like, I liked Elektra. The Abby really kind of annoyed me. I think just because it was very like they were pushing the angsty teenager like in your face. Hmm. And by the time she calmed down from that, it was already like we're in the back third of the film at this point. And it's like, it's too late now. Like, it's too late for you to be endearing now because you were such a little shit at the beginning of the film. So I never was really a fan of Abby, but yeah, I liked Elektra and Kitty Gitty. I would say those two were my favorites.
So yeah, Elektra was my favorite, really. The rest of them for me were fairly background. I thought Gorgon as Mott Miller was kind of boring. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't mind the fight scene with Abby. I thought that was cool. Other than that, I wasn't particularly bothered about Abby, but I thought the fight scene was cool where suddenly she had these magic bead things and started using them and killing bad guys and stuff. I thought Elektra was brilliant, really. Like she's my favorite in this, and I think her fight scenes were really good. You can tell she did them herself. Obviously, she's back in her heyday.
Yeah.
Of Alias, and clearly her fitness levels and training from Alias just helped carry her through this film.
You know, in that next season of Alias, after she did this movie, her character in Alias then began fighting with Sai.
Oh, okay. I can't remember that far back, but man, I loved Alias. Alias was so good. Even when it became a mess, it got worse as it went on. But yeah. Anyway, thoughts on Alias for another time. But I want to say the other character I love, not only because of any character development, but Tattoo. What a cool bunch of powers.
Yeah, now he had really cool powers. The other goons, like, I didn't really care. Like, Typhoid, I didn't care.
Oh, no, I didn't.
The bulletproof guy. At first, I was like, is this bulletproof guy supposed to be Luke Cage? Like, I was very confused. I've never heard of Stone. But yeah, Tattoo and the way that he could, like, oh, man, the animal
like the bird.
Was so cool.
Like, the bird come out of his shoulder or something. And then he could see through the bird. I thought that is a cool power. And I actually was sitting there thinking about this, thinking, is it a case of he, you know, that he, his power, I don't know what he is. Like, whether I don't know what is, I know nothing about him. I don't know if he's like a mutant or something like that.
That was my first thought when that bird popped onto his chest. I was like, oh, is this guy a mutant?
Well, I didn't know if whether part of his if part of his powers were that he just suddenly had tattoos, or whether he's whether he had powers, didn't know he had powers, had a tattoo, and then suddenly one of those tattoos came to life, and he was like, "Whoa!" I was like, really in my head trying to create a background for this guy, thinking, "I'd love to know, like, what came first? You know, the chicken or the egg?" Was it the power? Was it the powers and he suddenly had the tattoos, or he just by some chance had a tattoo which came to life magically?
Yeah.
And I was like, how cool would that be? Like going through life, not knowing that you had a power. And then one day you go to the tattoo store and I don't know, you decide to get a tattoo of,
hummingbird.
Like, yeah, a hummingbird or something, or I don't know, like some sort of a, you see these people that have little guns or animals or what? Well, yeah, you get like a cute bear or something, and suddenly it comes to life, like, and you're off, jumps off of your body, and you're like controlling a little bear running around the kitchen, and you're like, wow, I need to go back and make a gold brick and I need a gold brick tank.
If I had power, I would be like, somebody needs to tattoo Godzilla on me. Like that's the kind of tattoo I want.
I'd be like, where do I tattoo the gun? So I put the two guns across my ribs. So you just suddenly can grab two guns off your ribs. I was like, the abilities for this were endless. And I just in my head started creating a background for him. I know nothing about this guy, but I thought, what a cool bunch of powers. And I like I say, there was no character development there. I just thought the powers were endless for him. And I just wanted to know more about Tattoo than probably than most of them, if I'm honest. but yeah, his powers were my favorite. So
yeah, definitely. They were really cool.
Right, okay, so the structure of this movie, quite a cool opening scene where some random bad guy.
Jason Isaacs definitely didn't remember him being in this movie.
I didn't remember him either. I was like, Jason Isaac. I was like, the guy from Star Trek Discovery. I was like, well, I know he was in like loads of other things, but he is definitely my favorite in Star Trek Discovery. and playing a bad guy, strangely enough. Holed up in some hole where, no, it's not a hole actually, it looks like quite a nice place. Fairly well fortified, lots of guards, and he just knows it doesn't matter what happens, he's going to get it. And she shows up and he gets it. I thought that was a cool opening scene, if I'm honest. Break, you know, Elektra's back.
They actually said that they pulled that almost frame from frame from, I want to say, Elektra's solo issue, number 23. It's almost like they copied just that whole issue for that opening scene.
Oh, is that the series that I mentioned from...
It could be.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, do you know what? That actually, now you say that, that seems familiar. It's something I read when I did read some of her comics. So I thought that was a cool opening.
I love a good cold open like that, where it's first of all, I don't know who the hell any of these characters are. And then like everything, obviously, you know that it's Jennifer Garner, but like she's all like in shadows until 5 or 6 minutes in. Before she reveals her face.
I like the fact that the resurrection part doesn't come till much later on in the film. So that you, like you say, you get the cold open. So the plot lines throughout the movie kind of, you know, they're done by either flashbacks. You have this linear storyline where she's the assassin at the beginning. She meets a kind of handler, agent who gives her jobs. Then he gives her another job and she goes to this cabin in the woods and is giving her targets. But then you also have flashbacks of her resurrection from Stick and her training with Stick. And then you also have some flashbacks of her being like younger Elektra. And then you have the other subplot of what's going on with the Hand and Roshi, the Master of the Hand, and sort of some of the politics there. And the movie starts off fairly grounded, you know, an assassin movie with some targets. And then all of a sudden, halfway through, it kind of flips into this weird...
Yeah, once we get introduced to all of the goons, like Tattoo and everybody else, then it was just like, oh, now this is now taking, like, we're full dive into the supernatural at this point.
And also, the other things were weird to me, where like Elektra started developing weird astral and psychic powers. And I was like, what is that about?
Oh, they mentioned that when they were doing the flashbacks of her training, and they were talking about how when they do that kind of training or whatever it was, it gives you those kinds of power over time.
Oh, okay. I don't remember that at all. I'd forgotten about that, but I missed that, obviously, that comment
as
well.
It was very much like a throwaway line to explain why she had the ability, but like they did actually mention it earlier in the film.
And
because that's why her and Kirigi could talk to each other in that one scene toward the end. Like they met on some weird astral plane.
Yeah, and she doesn't have any of those in the comics, so I was completely thrown off by that. And I'll be honest, I didn't like her suddenly developing weird powers. That to me was just... I liked it when it was a straight, more grounded assassin movie. That's what I liked. And don't get me wrong, I loved Tattoo. I thought he was cool. I don't know. What are your thoughts on
that whole sequence in the woods was too much. Over the top.
The woman kisses her and gives her like the death kiss and all that. Yeah.
And that of course, like that pissed me off. I'm like, oh, of course, like we have a female superhero. Of course she has to have like a lesbian kiss. It's the same thing that happened in Chun-Li. It's like, to have a lesbian dance sequence in a club. Like, why wouldn't we in a female-led film? It's so dumb.
Yeah, that she suddenly turns around. Suddenly some woman starts kissing her to death.
Yeah. Come on.
Cliche, yeah. I didn't like any, really, when the supernatural part came in, I was like, oh, you're losing me now. I wasn't loving it as in, oh my God, this is Avengers Endgame style movie. Oh, yeah. But I wasn't hating it. Like I said, it was probably a small element of enjoyment. And then the moment the supernatural things come in, I was just like, what are you doing? Just, who thought this up? And I know that, Marvel Comics as a whole has everything from aliens to supernatural to, you know, Ghost Riders where they're possessed by some demon from hell, and I know you've got all kinds of cosmic cubes and all the rest of it, but when you're releasing a solo Elektra movie where people don't need to know about Thanos and everything else. And I know, I appreciate Fox only had the rights to Marvel, to Daredevil, Elektra, and the X-Men. If they'd have wanted to make it mutants and maybe actually cross over some of their properties, I could have bought into that. Like, I could have been like, yeah, that's cool. Like, if suddenly, I don't know, if one of the villains that had been in an X-Men movie had shown up, that probably would have been flipping awesome. And but
I always wonder, though, I always wonder, why didn't Fox have that kind of vision? Like, why is it that Feige did and they didn't, when they had those properties for so much longer? Like, they could have, I don't know.
Oh, imagine if they had the kind of vision to have been slow with the Daredevil franchise, not put, not bloat it, right? Actually do a really solid Daredevil movie and actually have a Daredevil Wolverine movie. Imagine releasing that Daredevil Wolverine movie. That people would have gone nuts.
You could have done that entire Daredevil movie without Bullseye, kept Kingpin. Kingpin goes to prison, and then in the second film, he's still running shit from prison. Like, that would have been a very realistic kind of second
follow-on film. Like, definitely. And I don't know, so much wrong with Fox.
But
and
I guess that's the difference. Like, that's the difference between somebody who actually is a visionary versus people who are just like, we have the rights. And it's like, okay, but you're not doing anything with them.
Well, you know how they always talk about, like, people that don't look at the past are doomed to repeat it? And you've got Sony doing the same shit now. Like, just, they're making these weird, are they connected, are they not connected, Sony movies. Like,
yeah, you know, just commit. Commit.
You've got the vulture
one way or the other, but stop with all of this vague bullshit.
Well, you've got Vulture showing up at the end of Morbius, so then you've got this Madam Web movie, which, whilst it wasn't amazing, it could have been connected to either Andrew Garfield's movie or Tobey Maguire's movie. And
or Venom.
They could have actually been clever enough. Yeah, or really, well, what they should do, if I'm honest with you, they should have put Venom and Andrew Garfield in the same universe, and Madam Web could have been a prequel to maybe the Andrew Garfield movies or something like that. They could have actually committed to their own, isn't it a Sony's movie of Spider-Verse characters or whatever they called it, some ridiculous name. They could have actually committed to some kind of shared universe, maybe kept Tobey Maguire separate, but built it around Venom and Andrew Garfield, and just say, look, we're bringing Andrew Garfield back. Maybe he won't get Spider-Man 3, maybe he will. What Amazing Spider-Man 3? I completely got off topic here, but I just think it's crazy to me that only Feige has really had the vision
to
create the MCU. And I know James Gunn apparently is going to create a DCU, that we'll see what happens with that and the shared universe over there. The DCU did try, but the trouble was they didn't have one person running it. They had multiple people at DC kind of fudging it together. There was a semi-shared universe. The MCU has been shared, and to be fair, it's been fairly successful. And even if you look at George Lucas's Star Wars, you know, that people obviously have got different thoughts on it, but it was a fairly successful kind of shared universe, and it's still
that's the kind of people that they have the long-term vision. Marvel was patient. Like, they were patient. They had a plan, and they released Iron Man. And again, at the time, Iron Man was a third-tier character. No one gave a shit about Iron Man. Like, that was not their most popular ace in the hole. You know what I mean? Like, you elevated this character to A-plus level. Like, it was not like a given that that was going to be successful. So they took the chance. They had the plan. And they were patient enough to keep chipping away at it. Versus,
and this is the thing,
just like, all of our heroes, like, everybody knows who our people are, so we're just gonna throw them all together in the Justice League. And it's like, no.
Well, this is the thing, circle back to this. Had Fox have actually been patient, structured, planned, and put somebody, it didn't have to be that they even put someone on Feige, and even if they had a team of people that were patient and clever, they could have made the X-Men and the Daredevil Elektra stuff all one shared universe, which would have been so good. And they could have even spoke to Sony and said, look, let's collaborate. Let's do a... And then I know there was rumours of Tobey Maguire and Wolverine crossing over. There were rumours, and I think there are some photos of I think some product together or something. I can't remember now, but I think there were rumours that Sony and Fox did discuss a Wolverine Spider-Man thing, but it never happened. But to come back to this movie in itself, I don't know, like, did you have any favorite moments? Is there anything you overly enjoyed about the plot? To me, the plot was fairly straightforward.
It was very simple.
I didn't love the fantasy elements. And the lesbian kiss thing in the forest was not for me. And Electra's psychic astral powers, I honestly know. I get she was resurrected, and I get that there may be some creepiness around that. But that should have just been it.
I didn't mind that. I guess because I bought into the explanation early enough in the film. So that didn't bother me. I did not enjoy any of the flashbacks, like to when she was a child. And like, because I couldn't, what was the demon? Is that just like her imagination putting the demon in the room with her mother? Was it an actual demon that killed her mother because of all of this other supernatural shit that's happening? Like, I did not understand what was happening with her mother's death. And it was just like, stop flashing back to this. I get it. Like, you're an orphan now. Okay, fine, Bruce Wayne. But like, I'm over your dead mother. Like, I don't care, you know? And it was just like all these flashbacks to like the little version of herself, like in the pool or running through the halls or like that part really, really bugged me. I was like, this is also very unnecessary. Because it didn't do anything to drive the story forward, and it doesn't do anything to explain why these other things are happening.
Mm-hmm. I'll be honest. I think my overall probably favorite scene is the opening, cold open, the cool assassin part. I thought that was probably the best. Yeah. I get that you couldn't have a whole film of it because they're trying to make Elektra a hero, so which she is. She's one of those anti-hero types. You didn't watch it, but there was a Matt Murdock. Well, there were several deleted scenes, so there was a Matt Murdock deleted scene. It's the first time I watched it actually ever. Mm-hmm. I'd heard about it for years. I literally remember reading about it loads of times. Loads of those comic book websites stuff to throw up about the Matt Murdock deleted scene, and they deleted it purely because the studio knew that Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner were in a relationship, and they felt that by putting the scene in there, I don't know, it would kind of make the film worse or something. The deleted scene is 10 to 30 seconds long. Elektra kind of wakes up. It's a dream. She sees Matt Murdock, and he starts standing up and walking towards her, and he's like, come back to me, Elektra. And she says something like, oh, I'm trying, or something or other, and then she just wakes up and he's gone. There's probably a few more words exchanged, but it's a completely pointless scene.
Yeah.
If it stayed in it, it would have had no impact on the story at all.
It could have been a post-credits. They didn't even do that much. There was no post-credit.
Well, yeah, I honestly think they should have put Matt Murdock in it. They should have genuinely had him in it, not as a dream, but they could have had something, even if it was in the movie and she picked up the phone to him in New York and didn't say anything. Like, you just see, I don't know, him and Foggy in the office, and the phone goes and he just picks it up. And she doesn't say anything. That would have been a cool moment to have had during the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's still quiet. And even if he'd have said like, Elektra, and then she just puts the phone down, that would have been, I think, oh, do you know what? Why don't people hire me to do these things? I think that, for me, I think that would have been like really cool moment to have done at some point. Maybe before like those weird people show up, you know, kind of a final battle type moment where,
yeah,
she thinks maybe she might not make it, so she wants to call the guy she loves rather than this stupid love thing with her and Mark Miller thing was useless, but they could have done something a little bit more realistic with the Matt Murdock thing. And I don't see any harm in Matt Murdock having been in the movie, regardless of whether Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner were dating or not. So,
yeah, I mean, It's related to the previous film. Like, I don't think that would have been an issue.
Well, this is a spin-off from Daredevil, so...
Yeah, exactly. Like, it would have made sense.
But then again, this is this whole lack of vision thing. They clearly just were done with Daredevil. So, right, okay, Elektra, let's hope this does well. And it didn't, so... But yeah, did you have any favorite moments? Sorry?
No, not particularly. I did like the opening scene, like you said, but not really.
So the music, in honesty, I'm disappointed. This soundtrack was nowhere near as good as the first one. In fact, I don't remember any music at all. Whether they played any music, I'm sure they did, but it was probably something classical or something. You know, those kind of classical backgrounds. I nothing jumped out at me. The soundtrack for this movie, though, makes me laugh. It's by Wind Up Records, and none of the songs on the album, other than three tracks, are not in the movie. And those last three tracks only play during the end credits, so they have actually really no connection to the movie. They're not playing over any of the scenes that we see. So when we were talking about last week in Bring Me to Life, and we were like, "How cool was that?" Like Evanescence, and just you know, some of the rock music from that time that we probably loved. You know, you kind of didn't want to admit you loved it back then, but actually you did really love it. There's none of those tracks in there. So the only three songs that appeared on the soundtrack were Sooner or Later, Wonder, Photograph.
There was a Thousand Mile Wish. There was a Stain song that played at one point that I did recognize in the film. But that was about it.
Yeah. Well, nothing of real any consequence, to be honest. It was disappointing music. Sorry. like the last few reviews, I've been shouting out movies that come out on a similar occasion, and actually I've been quite enjoying doing that, if I'm honest, because I like, maybe I'm getting older, but it's nice to remember like when we had years where there's some fantastic movies come out and some not so fantastic movies, and you kind of forget about the movies that are not so fantastic. So
yeah,
I'll start with the ones that were on people's best of lists. So 2005, when Electra came out, there was some competition, boy. Like, I'm telling you.
Yeah, for real.
There was some really good competition. I forgot.
Although one that you put on here is very questionable.
Oh, it's on a lot of people's best of lists. I know what you're going to say. It's on a lot of people's
best of lists. I enjoyed it, but that's questionable.
Honestly, I Googled quite a few best of lists, and it was on a lot of those lists. And I know what you're going to say. Wallace and Gromit.
I love Wallace and Gromit. I really do. But like, I don't think I've ever listed Wallace and Gromit on like any of my favorites.
But it was on a lot of people's best of lists. When I typed in best of 2005, Wallace and Gromit was on there. So
that's
right. Funny. Okay. The rest of them, I think, were fair enough. Okay. So Elektra was joined by two other comic book giant movies, Sin City and Batman Begins. Now, Batman Begins, I did go to the cinema and see.
Yes.
I don't remember going to see Sin City at cinema, but I have watched it. So,
History of Violence was really good.
Yeah.
History of Violence was so good that I left the movie theater and went straight to the bookstore and I bought the graphic novel.
Oh, wow.
And then Brokeback Mountain. Brokeback Mountain was really, really good, but Brokeback Mountain had the most amazing flipping soundtrack. And I remember being so pissed off that year because it did not win Best Original Score at the Oscars. And I was like, are you deaf? Like, how did this not win Best Original Score? Oh, it made me so mad. It made me so mad.
Right. Okay. So, Kingdom of Heaven. And also this one, which people love, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, a film I've seen multiple times, yes, and we have reviewed on this show. So yes, it was a heavy year for competition. Sorry, Jennifer, you're in the thick of it.
I mean, you can't compete with Harry Potter, let's be honest here. Come on now.
Any of those movies, but yeah. Right, okay, 2005 didn't have some, there were some terrible movies, sorry, out there. So I Googled quite a few worst of lists as well. I'll be honest with you, there's one or two on there that actually didn't completely offend me. One
was super disappointing, and I had really high hopes because of who they cast, but I was very disappointed by it.
Elektra was on pretty much everybody's worst of list that I found. So Are We There Yet was also on a few people's lists, which I've seen, and it's all right. It's not exactly bad.
What you think it's going to be.
Yeah. Aeon Flux, which I do remember watching at the time. I can't remember my opinion on it now, to be honest. But
listen, I was obsessed with Aeon Flux and the shorts from MTV. They were so good, and they were so well done. And when they first said they're doing an Aeon Flux movie, I was like, oh no, don't. But then they were like, but we're cast, we've cast Charlize Theron as Aeon Flux. And I was like, wait a minute. Okay, this could be good. And it was not. It was just like, what did you guys do? Like, this, there's no reason this should have been a bad film when you had Charlize Theron at the helm. Like, I don't understand.
Right. So White Noise, which horror movie.
Did not watch. Scary movie.
I went to the cinema and saw this, actually. It was flipping scary, if I'm honest. So,
A
movie I have not watched because it just looked terrible.
It was terrible. That would be my most terrible film of 2005.
Son of the Mask. The Dukes of Hazzard was also
that was actually pretty funny. Like it was, but it was like stupid humor.
I don't remember it. I mean, I remember it, but I don't remember watching it. The wedding date, which I don't remember. And then this film, which I definitely did not watch.
Oh, this film was awful. The first one was kind of funny. This one was just terrible.
Right. Okay. So that's Juice Bigelow, European Gigolo. So, those kind of films are not for me. I don't watch films like that. Right. I think Elektra was in some good company there, to be honest. She, if I'm honest, out of those, all of those movies, she probably is the best one. So, Are We There Yet? No, Are We There Yet might be the best one. And then Elektra. But I think her company in the worst of movie is well suited.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
She would not have been suited in that best of list.
Oh, no, not at all. Not next to Harry Potter and Batman. Not at all.
When you got Christopher Nolan. And this is why I said this the other day. Like, when I won't talk about Madame Web now because we will see it at some point, but I'll review it at some point. But when I went to Madame Web, my expectations for Madame Web were not the same expectations of Batman Begins, for instance. Like when I went to see a Christopher Nolan movie, I went in with high expectations. And as that trilogy went on, my expectations actually increased with each movie. When I went to see Madame Web the other day, I walked in expecting a trash Sony movie. So I actually walked out not particularly hating Madame Web. With Elektra, I think you go in and you know what you're going to get, really. Having seen Daredevil, my expectations were so low, coming off the back of that.
Yeah.
And that's why it took me about 6 or 7 years to watch it after it came out. And actually, it was better than my expectations because my expectations were quite low.
Exactly. Your expectations were on the floor already.
Yeah. They were. My expectations were this is a 0 out of 5 all day long.
Yeah.
And actually, I didn't hate this movie. So in summary, I think I didn't love this movie. Would I watch it again? I wouldn't ever say no, I would never watch this again. Like I couldn't say no, but I wouldn't put it on. I don't think I'd ever choose to put this on again. Like, I really want to watch Elektra. There's no point in me thinks that. But if it was on the television and someone was watching it, and it's probably like a good background movie, if I'm honest. It's not offensive. I think Jennifer Garner as a person is actually lovely. I think she does her best in any role I've ever seen her in, including this.
She does the best with what she's given.
Yeah, I definitely think she's been given the best with this type of movie. But yeah, before we move to ratings, any sort of last words on this?
No, this is a very forgettable film to me. It was not as bad as I thought it would be, but that does not make it a good film.
Yeah, it's definitely a forgettable movie. A few weeks from now, I'll forget we even did this episode.
Yeah.
Right. Where would you rate it?
I'd probably put this one at like a 2.5.
Yeah, it's not bad, Ryan. I'm going to give it a 2 out of 5.
Okay, all right. It's rare that I'm higher than you.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
2.5.
I feel sorry for her. She clearly didn't want to be in it, but she still gave as much as she could give with what she got. Right, next week, the book club is returning. The last book club was in December, so we're going to try and do a few more.
We're a quarterly book club now.
Episode 17 of the book club. It's not that, that's not bad, actually. So following on from these last two movies and the fact that the book club is late to the party, and we always said that late to the party was going to review essential graphic novels, I know we deviate here and there from that. I mean, but it has always been around that marker. We're going to review Daredevil, The Man Without Fear by Frank Miller. So,
yes.
And then come back after that for the longest theme that we have ever done on Geeks Unleashed.
We're not telling you about it just yet. You got to come back.
So we've done themes before. They've not normally gone on for any more than 5 or 6 weeks. Yeah. So Blade was
Harry Potter was the longest.
Oh, yeah. Harry Potter was the longest. This is actually way longer than Harry Potter.
Yeah. So can you guess what it is?
Yeah, you may know. Anyway, you can follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and X, apparently.
And you can get this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Google, Podbean, Apple, Spotify. We are everywhere. So please leave us a 5-star review and tell your geeky friends.
When are you going to say something at the end of this episode?
When?
No, it was something else you threatened to say at the end of the
episode. Something else. What did I say? I said I was going to say something in a really bad accent. Hold on. Well,
something about shillings. Anyway, we should probably go. She was going to try and...
I shan't give you a shilling.
No, that's not an English accent. All right, anyway, see you next week.
Good journey.